justice for all. That's our life.
Jessica, roll call, please.
Lassiter.
Here.
Nemechek.
Here.
Conklin.
Here.
Moody.
Here.
Needhammer.
Here.
Quorum present.
Okay, thank you. Next is citizens' comments on non-agenda items. Our agenda tonight is quite simple, the short-term rental, but if there's anything else that anyone wants to address the commission, that would be the time. Okay, we'll move on then to our work session. And first is the commissioner participation update. And I also have an introduction that I want to read to the audience, and we'll cover the commissioner participation with that. The short-term rental issue is not unique to Boyne City. Communities throughout our region and across the state have experienced many, if not all, the same positive and negative impacts of short-term rentals as Boyne City. And many have moved forward after reaching community consensus to create a solution. Our goal as we begin this process this evening is to listen to the community and to encourage the community members to listen to each other. We want to engage as much of the community as possible so at the end of this process, we can create a solution with common principles that protects the health and safety of our community, maintains the character of our neighborhoods, and respects the rights of homeowners. We are not here to debate with each other. There will be an opportunity for that as solutions begin to take shape. The primary focus of tonight's meeting is to obtain public input in regards to the issues of short-term rentals. In order to best determine what future action the city should take, the first step is to define the problem. Once the problem is specifically identified, we can best determine what are the best methods to mitigate it. This is the first step in the process, and no actions or answers have yet been developed. We are just listening. We have made available to each of you comment cards. The cards are being provided in addition to allowing everyone an opportunity to speak during the public comment. If you wish...
Recording in progress.
If you wish, you can use these cards to submit written comments. Scott and Bonnie from our planning department will collect cards at the end of the meeting. People are also welcome to submit written comments on the short-term rental topic after the meeting as well. Those comments should be submitted to the planning department. Also, feel free to contact any commissioner. A question was posed to the commission and city staff about potential conflicts of interest regarding the consideration of possible short-term rental regulation. At a meeting earlier this year, Commissioner George Lassiter, who has an accessory dwelling unit on his property that is used as a short-term rental, abstained from the discussion in an abundance. Who has an accessory dwelling unit on his property that is used as a short-term rental, abstained from the discussion in an abundance of caution based on preliminary discussions with the city attorney. Since that time, city administration and the commission have had more in-depth discussions with our city attorney and are confident that no conflict of interest exists at present. As such, in this information gathering stage, all commissioners will be participating in the short-term rental discussion. However, I, as your mayor, my fellow commissioners, and city administration are keenly aware of the potential for conflicts of interest and will be continually assessing this possibility throughout this process. Should a conflict arise, it will be addressed immediately in the appropriate manner. We are strongly committed to conducting the public's business in the best interest of the citizens of Boyne City and look forward to receiving your input on the issue of short-term rentals. So, those are my opening statements and guidelines for how we will proceed tonight and an attempt to answer the question of conflict of interest. Is there any public comment in regards to my comments? Okay, commissioners, is there anything that you'd like to add?
Or?
time, our city planner, Scott McPherson, will give us a short-term rental status update.
Thank you, Mayor. Some of you may have been here in December when I gave a very similar presentation on the status of short-term rentals in the city. This is kind of an update to that presentation with some more current data. The short-term rental discussion started a couple of years ago with the development of city goals, and one of those city goals was in regards to housing, and there was a specific task associated with that goal, and that was to examine the issues arising from short-term rentals that's less than monthly and their community impacts. Next, please. So first we would like just to start talking about housing units. What exactly are we talking about? And we use the census definition of a housing unit, which basically is any place you can stay, an apartment, a mobile home, a group home, anything that's used as a living quarters. So our 2010 census had 2,092 housing units in the city. And then the 2020 census had 2,296 units. I'm a little skeptical of those numbers, as I think there was more than four units added in those 10 years. I also have a database of dwelling units that I have kept over the last 19 years here, and I have come up with 2,411 units. So I think it's safe to say we have anywhere between 23 and 24 housing units in the city. This is a map of all those units that I have mapped over the years, with each green dot representing a housing unit. So those are single families, apartments, group quarters, mobile homes, every type of dwelling in the city. And this is a breakdown of where those units are located. 54% are in the traditional residential district. 23% are in the multifamily district. 6% are in the rural estate district. 6% are in the manufactured housing district. 5% are in the waterfront residential district. 5% are in the central business district, and 1% is in the professional office district. And just to give you a little acclimation of where those districts are, the primary yellow, that's the largest, that's the traditional residential district. The lighter yellow, kind of on the periphery, is the rural estate district. The tan, along the water, and a couple other spaces around the city, that's the multiple family district. The blue along the water is the waterfront residential district. And then the manufactured housing district is the two spots where we've zoned for those uses. Then we break it down to what type of houses we have. 75% are detached, one or two dwelling, single family dwelling units. 11% are condominiums, 9% are apartments, and 5% are group quarters. Last year, around July, the City Commission approved a contract with Granicus Host Compliance. That was a one-year contract to provide real-time data on a number of short-term rental listings in the city. Basically, they scan all the various listing platforms for short-term rentals and captures that every 3 days and provides us a list. And they identify those by address, so then we can identify exactly where they are in the city. They provide this dashboard. Right here. This was from December of 2021. So that shows 145 listings in the city, or rentals in the city. That number of 231, that's the total number of listings. A lot of people list on multiple websites, so the same unit would have multiple listings in the city. So I looked at that and reviewed that 145, and we came down to about 140 that we actually found, because there were some duplicates and some not in the city. In March of 2022, the number of rental units in the city increased to 156 units. A cross-check of those addresses in my data, I found it was more like 153, with three, there was a duplicate and one that was not in the jurisdiction and one could not be identified. So there was a net increase of 12. So this is the December, and those green dots represent exactly where the location of all those various rental units are. You can see kind of a concentration down in the south, residential areas along the waterfront. And then in March, we updated it. It's a little difficult to see, but the red dots on that map represent the new ones, and most of those increases came in that kind of south residential district. I think there was a net of 10 units in that residential district, and a net of one or two in the other districts. The short-term rental unit dwelling types, detached dwellings, 55% of them, attached condominiums, 35%, accessory dwelling units or apartments make up about 10%. The sleeping capacity ranges from 2 to 16 persons, 1 bedroom at 36%, 2 bedroom at 24%, 3 bedrooms 34%, 4 bedrooms at 4% or 6%. The average sleeping capacity is 7 persons per unit, and for all units there's about 958 available rooms available per person that can stay. The rates range from $85 a night to $875 a night, with the average being $265 a night. Just doing some simple math, at a 30% occupancy for the average rate of $265, that's about $29,000 in annual revenue. In regards to ownership, we had ownership records for 140 of the 153 identified units. Of those, 8 persons owned 2 units or entities, and 1 owned 3 units. 122 of those list ownership in Michigan, with 54 list ownership in Boyne City. 18 listed ownership out of state, and 20 were owned by a corporation or LLC. Short-term rental properties with homestead exemptions, 38 of the 140 units have a homestead exemption, that's about 27%. And to break that down by zoning district, in the traditional residential district, 29 of the 73 have a homestead. In rural estate, none. In the waterfront residential district, 2 of the 12. in the multifamily district, two of the 43, and in the central business district, four of the 13, and in the professional office district, the one did have a homestead exemption. So the homestead exemption doesn't mean someone lives there all the time. They can get that exemption without living there, but there's a more likelihood that that person is living in the home, or they may have an accessory dwelling unit and a homestead, and they live there and rent out the unit. The short-term rental average property values by zoning district, the SEV of all is about $120,000. In the traditional residential district, it's $89,000. In the rural estate district, $148,000. In the multifamily district, $132,000. The waterfront residential district, $274,000. And the central business district, $138,000. So everyone knows that SEV is the state equalized value that you get on your taxes. Doesn't mean that how much the house is worth or how much someone sells it for, it's just what the tax man puts at it. Yes. And the map goes out, this is kind of the north side of town. So with the green drop being those that are under 100, up to 75,000, those with the red dot are between 75 and 100,000. The gray, 100,000, 150,000, and then the black dots, 150,000 and over. So that's the north side of town, and there's the south side of town showing that same kind of area. So that's kind of the information I put together to give a kind of foundation of the status of the day. So I'd be happy to answer any questions regarding this data that the commissioner and the public may have.
We'll make sure to put this presentation up on the city's website with the agenda for tonight's meeting, so if anybody wants to look at it later on, you don't have to take a lot of notes tonight.
Is there any way you can send a copy of it to me?
Yeah.
Sorry, you need a copy of it?
Sure.
So we'll move to public comment just on Scott's report. We'll have public comment on just the general theme, but does anyone have any questions or comments about the report that Scott just presented?
Scott, the only question I have is
just could you, your name and address, please?
Absolutely. My name is Doug, and I live on Charlotte West Street. I'm curious to know what the contributing factor would be to not knowing the number of residences within the city.
I'm not quite sure what.
Are you referring to the census count?
Correct.
Where your count was different than the census?
Oh, the census? I don't know how the census made their numbers. For the 2010 census and for the 2020 census, a part of the address verification program, I physically identified and verified addresses as part of that process. And then doing that process, I created the database of all those. So my confidence is much higher in my data than the census data.
Great, thank you.
Yeah.
And Scott, you share that information with the Census Bureau, correct?
Yes.
Okay, yes. So we provide them what we think is the best count here in the city, and then what magic they do with it, and on their end, it's up to them.
Sure. Thank you.
Sure.
Anyone else have a question or comment about Scott's report?
Rich Cook, Harbridge. Do you have any indication of if the short-term rentals are increasing or decreasing, or do you know if it, over the years, if you...
We've had this data since October. We entered the contract in July, and they gave us our first count in October. And at that time, the number was in the 140s, and stayed that way each month until this last month when there was that increase of 12. So I'm interested to see what happens going forward as we approach the summer season. I think we'll learn a lot more about any kind of seasonal changes to this as we move forward.
Anyone else? Same.
Hi, Sandy Pritchard, 526 East Lincoln. I noticed you mentioned 50 bus platforms. Is it, there are lots of platforms out there, so it'll be number, that's a pretty low number.
Granite just gave that number to me, is how many that they review, and it may be going up all the time, but part of their business is to monitor all of them. So that's what I'm assured that they're doing, is every viable platform they are reviewing for units. And that, you know, like I said, that number's probably increasing all the time.
Scott, in that same period of time, Steve Schnell, Steve Schnell, Shelby County Housing Ready Program, and Boyne City resident. Can you estimate just about how many, in that same period of time between your two studies, with the increase in short-term rentals, could you estimate the number of new homes or home housing units? I guess we've got the manufactured housing part and others in that same period of time.
Well, over the past year, we've issued over 35 permits for new dwellings. How many of those have been constructed? I don't know, but so you know, there is, those that has increased as well. Yeah.
Anyone else? Don Wrighty, Boyne City. I'd like to know what the rules are for that homestead exemption and if it's monitored for people cheating with whatever the rules are.
That would be a question best asked to the assessor. That's not from the area. I'm not an expert on what qualifies for a homestead exemption.
Could we give some information about how the assessor could be contacted with that question?
His information is available on our website, and you call our office and you can get his number and his email address.
And he hosts office hours, I think, Wednesday afternoon?
Correct. Yeah. Wednesday morning.
At the City Hall. And an appointment's not needed, is it?
No. No, and they answer if somebody wants to call them. They're pretty good about responding to calls, so.
I was going to say, if you Google Michigan state tax, property tax exemption, well, there's a page that's very detailed on if you're a single veteran, how to go that route, the qualifications of time in the dwelling, you have to be at that address. So just Google state of Michigan tax exemption.
Anyone else?
My name is Cindy Persons. What about when somebody has a house in a garage and they convert a garage into an apartment and sell it for maybe short-term rental, and the house is already a short-term rental? Do you take that into account?
Well, currently in the city, accessory dwelling units are a use by right, and yeah, we do count accessory dwelling units as part of the short-term rental calculation that we've done.
Scott, can you explain use by right? What exactly that means?
A use by right is basically any use that you can do without any special permission or approvals by the city, as long as you meet, you know, the basic setbacks and dimensional standards. You have the right to do that activity. And in the residential districts, accessory dwelling units are a use by right. So anybody wanted to build one and they had the room on their property, they could do that.
Anyone else? I can see a hand, I can't see you.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yeah, Patty Walton. I live out on Evelyn Township, but I own at the Landings, and I rent those units, and I am also on the board of directors at the Landings. So I just am curious at this point, in case I have missed other meetings regarding this, are we just monitoring right now, trying to gather data related to what's happening within the city related to short-term rentals? Is that the stage that we're at, and where are we headed? Is this, at this point, we're just gathering data to look for trends?
No, I think you might come a little bit late to the meeting, is that
correct? Sorry, yeah.
Yeah, Scott is giving an update, and then we have no regulation in Boyne City, but the point of the meeting is to get public input on what the issues are surrounding short-term rentals.
Okay.
So we'll get into that just in
a minute. Okay, because I have a lot of experience related to the subject, as well as here and in another state.
Great.
But then also and involved with how we handle things at the Landings, too. So I just wanted to participate.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You had an amount estimate of how much have an idea of how many people that bring home for children a year?
Well, this, from the one slide, there was about 958 persons that could stay.
Okay, that was on there.
Yeah, in town at any one time. And if you use a 30% occupancy as kind of the standard, you could estimate there's probably 300 people staying in town at any given time.
Is it much higher than the historical?
I would say it's fluctuated, oh, absolutely, but you know, that's just to give you an average idea.
Anyone else?
Sherry Culver, Lakeview Drive, Port City. We've talked about the number of housing units in the city limits. Do you have an idea of how many we would need in terms of, like, if we needed affordable housing, what that number should be in terms of growth? I know there's Fox Run going in, some other developments, but...
There are studies that have been done and the number of units that are needed. I think, Steve, you might have those numbers on the top of your head.
I just have the... Steve Schellig, our Shiloh County Housing Ready Program. We did a study in 2019 of annual housing demand in the community, and the number of units estimated at that time, this is again every year, the market in Boyne City, within Boyne City, could absorb 171 rentals and 57 homeownership units. That number of units, there's a market demand for that number of units. And that's every year for 5 years, isn't it?
Anyone else? Okay, commissioners, do you have any questions or comments for Scott regarding this report?
This is, can I ask a question virtually?
This is Sherry.
Sorry to interrupt.
Can you identify yourself, please?
Yes, I'm Sherry from Citrus Maine.
Your question?
It was hard for me to hear that answer to the last question. The number of units needed, it seemed like it was assessment that was done in 2019. Telling the number of units that you believe you need in the city?
Steve, do you want to go
to the microphone? Is that correct? Could you just clarify that?
Yeah, we'll have Steve move to the microphone. That was a surprise.
If anybody wants more detail on this, it's on housingnorth.org to give you a lot of the background about the methodology used for this. So it's a target market analysis is what it's called. So it's a real estimate based on a lot of different kinds of marketing data. And so, yeah, that is a 2019 study. Obviously, we've had COVID and construction changes and everything since then. So take that, understand the context of the study. But it's an annual market demand. And the study that we have online breaks it down by income level, too. Most of that demand is in the very lower income levels. So I can share this, or you can go online and get the whole thing and bore yourself to tears by reading it. But 171 units for rental and 57 for homeownership units. Did that answer your question?
171 units for rental and 57 for rental. So is this what that you think that we would need to have to fill the demand that was there?
Correct. Like there would be enough people interested at those various income levels that would want to move to Boyne City that where we don't have enough housing units to fulfill that.
Okay, thank you. So obviously, probably needs to be taken into account some of the changes that have happened since COVID.
Yeah.
Will a new study be done?
Definitely. We've talked about updating the study, but the market study people have told us to wait a little while until things have settled to update this. But yeah, so we don't know how that may have changed from COVID yet.
Mike?
Okay. Thank you.
So just to clarify what I think I hear you saying, Steve, you were saying about 200 units combined per year for 5 years, so about 1,000 units. We think we have demand for over a five-year period?
The study's pretty clear about not making it cumulative.
Okay.
So they never, yeah.
No.
That was my first reaction too, but they say, no, if you end the year, it kind of restarts. You really can only absorb so much into the community every year.
Okay.
So,
thank you.
Thanks for that clarification.
Okay, we go to the commissioners. Any questions?
have a hand?
You have one more hand.
Just a quick clarification. When you say rental, do you mean long-term rental?
Yes.
Not nightly short.
Thank you. Yes, rentals, yes. Yeah, long-term.
Okay, commissioners? Anything?
Thank you. You have one more hand in the public stuff.
You mentioned various incomes. What is the average on the income that they're looking to rent for a month?
I think it's more important to break it down by, they do, like, give you an example for rental units.
Steve, could you move?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. For rental units, I'll give you an average. If you're looking at household incomes between $28,000 and $40,000, that's the biggest sector, meaning they can afford rent $700 to $1,000 a month. There's 104 units in Boyne City alone. It could be a different market. And for home ownership, just the biggest sector is people who can only afford $150,000 home or less. There's 43 of those homes that are needed in our community, and those are for households that earn up to $60,000 a year. So these are all estimates, but and again, you'll see the breakdown in pie charts and all that in our report.
Okay, anybody else?
Just on Scott's,
I'm sorry. Commissioners, anything? Scott, the other question I have is how long are you going to be updating so we can be every 3 months, every 4 months, and you talk about
that? I've been looking at it beginning every month to kind of update those numbers.
So are they updated on the website? Is there any place where people can go to get that information?
Yeah. I can put this study on the website, and then I can update those graphs and charts on a monthly basis.
So we could use social media to kind of direct people to where you can share with us. That was a great report. Okay, we'll move to our public input right now.
You gonna let the commission ask questions, Scott?
Oh, I thought we just did that. I got our.
It might be a little too early, but regardless of what happens, have you looked into what your department's going to need to do, whether we continue to go with Grantis, whether you guys are going to take this in-house? I know you got a new assistant that we just hired now, but right now, Monday through Friday, you guys have a routine that you guys are doing. With whatever this commission does, is going to affect your guys' daily routine and your man hours drastically, essentially. Have you come up with anything to give the commission kind of feedback of, hey, if this is a direction or decision, this is an impact planning and zoning department in such a way, we're going to need to look at, you know, additional staffing, additional time needed to help?
Yeah, I mean, that's all part of the calculation, and it's going to be a function of ultimately what decision the city commission makes. It could be as little as continuing to monitor as we're doing, which would take very little additional, or it could be something as large as having a, you know, certification, registration, inspection, and all those kinds of services where you would have to have additional staffing and additional resources. So yeah, I mean, it could vary greatly depending on ultimately what the city commission decides.
Right, just granted, because I've been on their website, I've looked through, they offer different tier packages. It kind of looks like they offer like a basic plan, a medium plan, and a very intensive plan where they do a lot of hands-on things and partnering with the community. Have you kind of come up with like a desire on what you would like to see the participation level being with Granicus and kind of that price point on what that might look like?
No, until I get a better idea of what the policy is going to be, it's going to be tough to really make that kind of determination.
Yeah, we have a lot of good
questions. That's all. Thanks.
Commissioners, was there anything else? All right. Well, we can move to the public comment now. I do have a tweak to the rules meeting. I'm asking you that a public comment should be focused on what you believe are the primary issues, impacts, positive or negative, of short-term rentals. During the public comment, staff will be taking notes
and when public comment is complete, staff will review what it heard and try to identify common themes, issues, and concerns. Each person wishing to comment is asked to speak from the podium to state their name and address. Each speaker will be allowed 5 minutes. Time will be kept by our city clerk treasurer. The speakers will have one time to address the commission during the public comment period. Are there any questions, Mike?
Just so the people here and online know, obviously we know we have the ability to talk to people, and I see one hand that's raised right now, and I'll keep the mayor apprised of that, and you can recognize them as you so choose.
Okay, thank you. So, who would like to begin?
You want to go with our person online and let them show up? Ask them to unmute. Yes.
My question, this is Sarah Christensen, 125 Stewart Street. And my question is just, what is the goal of creating this ordinance?
That's kind of what we're hoping to figure out today.
Yeah, Sarah, I think that's why we're here. To see if there is a need and what the goals of any kind of regulation might be. But first we're...
Okay, so there's not a preconceived goal?
No, not at all. No, we're here simply to listen.
Okay.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Hi, sir.
My name's come to the podium.
Yeah. My name is Zachary Knott. I was born and raised in Boyne City, 2574 Main Street is my address. So I have kind of a biased opinion. I am a sales executive and I do vacation rentals throughout the entire United, or throughout all of Michigan. And with that being said, I grew up here when it was less prevalent, right? And over time it's become more and more. And I think it's a great thing. I think Main Street has grown with it. I think our economy has grown. And that being said, the whole state of Michigan is regulated by township, right? And it's great that we're having this discussion because regulations are needed. It's the problem, and I feel like most people, the negative aspect of it, is when you have someone that's an absent owner, right? An investor that's here that maybe has never seen the property or never around. Now, there can become some concerns there because you have no regulation other than potentially calling the police, just like a bad neighbor, right? Where instilling something such as like management locally, it can even be the owner, like someone that lives nearby, or different type of restrictions like that. Doing some type of inspection for making sure the home's up to code and things like that. Those are all very positive things. And I think it, you know, in the sense of it being a positive compared to the negative, I really weigh it towards it being a positive. So that's all I'd say.
So Zach, I just want to make sure, so you the absent owner is a problem, is an issue, having a local manager you would recommend?
Yeah, I don't necessarily think it has to be like a local management company within 25 miles radius is something that's very common. It could be, you know, some people are finding retirement in it and buying the second home that they've always wanted and then vacation rentaling it, but it's just down the road from their main house. That could be a property manager as well, right? It doesn't have to be someone like that, just someone nearby that can, that the neighbors can call, that, you know, is monitoring the occupancy, the number of cars that are there, regulating it in some restriction. Yeah.
Can I ask me a question?
I don't think so. That would be appropriate.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Yes?
What was the question you just asked me?
I was making sure that I heard what it was saying.
Hi, my name is Tom Parker. I live at 700 Front Street. I'm actually the president of the Harbor Association. So I would just like to second the comment about having professional property rental management services involved. That's been something that's really helped us at the Harbor, reduce a lot of the challenges we've had with short-term rentals. Secondly, in that role, I've also just want to make city council and citizens aware. Insurance companies are taking a negative look at short-term rentals as far as insurability of properties. To that point, we've been notified by our insurance carrier that they will no longer cover us if we continue to allow short-term rentals. And that's, this is the Philadelphia company. They cover hundreds of condominium units across the country. So they're a major player. They're a fantastic insurance company. So we've got, we're out shopping for new insurance companies right now. And the folks at Cortez and Flynn are helping us out. So we'll see. I don't know where that's going to go, but I'm just making you aware that insurance companies are taking a negative view and looking to manage risk and eliminate what they see as higher risk. And then the final one is, I'm also a registered professional engineer, so from the standpoint of code, we've got dwellings built to residential standards that potentially, or that actually are being used as commercial rental properties. One Water Street was built to have commercial rentals, and as such has our fire escapes, fire extinguishers, sprinkler systems, things like that. So the question, the thing to consider is if the city is going to allow short-term rentals in dwellings that are built to residential standards, is there some adjustment or readdressment of code requirements by changing those potentially to what could be conceived as a commercial operation? So, and I know with commercial properties, everything that's been touched on Main Street has had to come to absolute positive, totally up to current standards. At significant expense, but of course it's a public place, so it needs to be safe. As the mayor pointed out, safety of our citizens is a primary goal as well. So.
Could you, Tim, I apologize, could be asking questions.
Probably should be here.
Well, thank you for that. Yep. Do you have any questions?
For him, no. For the short-term rifles representative, yeah.
Anyone good questions? Okay, thank you. Zach, could you...
I can answer the insurance thing, too. I have something. When everything sinks, something always rises. So there's supplemental insurance coming. More and more companies are starting supplemental insurances, and a supplemental insurance is an insurance policy that's only being charged when the home is being rented by guests. And so the owner pays that fee to then give them coverage while the guests are in house, which is actually pretty phenomenal. One of the examples is called Assurant, which is just a company that our company utilizes.
So with your experience, because I don't deal with short-term rentals as much as I've been hearing that I do, so I don't have great experience with managing them. But you being in the position that you're in, where you're overseeing the state of Michigan and you're managing short-term rentals, not just locally in Boynton City, but for the state of Michigan, obviously, the company that you're working for has to manage for the local ordinances, for the local municipalities that have ordinances for STRs.
Correct. And we handle the compliance for each one.
Right. And one thing I think you mentioned, which I've been seeing, is a very similar thing in a lot of the local municipalities, is having a point of contact whether it's a property manager, whether it's an owner, for any nuisance or any issues, safety concerns, anything like that.
Correct.
In your position, do you see a big difference in the communities that have the ordinances requiring a point of contact
100%, yeah.
versus communities where you're managing STRs and they don't have that standard? Are you seeing a difference or an influx of nuisances, safety concerns, so on and so forth?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, look at it from a personal analogy, right? If you were owner of a home and you had guests next to you that it was a short-term rental, who do you have to call other than the cops, right? If you had a professional management company, you could escalate it in a different way, and then they could end up on a non-renters list again, right? And so then they're not allowed to come back, so you're venting those renters.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yep.
Perfect. There's multiple contributing factors here that I feel like a lot of people overlook, right? It's not just, these type of things are offering a lot of other community jobs as well as trade work and bringing a lot of positivity in here. And so, it's a catch-22 in a way, and I know some people will shake their head, and trust me, I'm all for, we need more affordable housing, but you got to look at the long-term economy too, right? Things change, and so adapting to that change instead of resisting that change, I think, is the correct way to do it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Tom Shraw of Lakeshore Drive in Boynton City. I've known Zach
I've represented Zach. I've known Zach's mom. I've represented her. I've known his brother. I've represented him. I know Bill, but I've never represented Bill. I love this guy, but you know what? If you're here in favor of short-term rentals, and it's because of nuisance or not nuisance, you're missing the boat. Short-term rentals is an issue for this community because it's going to cost you your football team. You have to put your view 8 years down the road. And imagine with me for a minute that every home in the traditional residential district or the waterfront residential district is a short-term rental. Imagine that for a minute. You won't have to have a school. You won't have to have buses. You won't have to have teachers. You won't have any place to house your teachers. And that's where people like Zach and realtors in the town, not all realtors, but realtors that serve on the planning commission and realtors that may serve on this commission, are going to sell your community to somebody that lives in Beaver Creek, Colorado. And you think they're going to give you a damn about your football team? No. Wow. Now, you think I'm kidding? You think I'm, you know, I feel it sometimes I'm like John the Baptist. But that's exactly what's happened in Sedona, Arizona. They've lost their football team. They've lost their Boy Scouts. They've lost their Little League. And their community is 10,000 strong. But their demographic has been flipped to people who are 61 on average age or live in California. So, if you don't think it's happening here, you can look at the statistics for your elementary school and you'll see over the last 5 years, your number of elementary students, grades kindergarten through fourth grade, have dropped 19% over the last 4 years. Don't take my word for it. Look into it yourself. You've got to look at this as not, this isn't about if somebody came over from a party and peed in my yard. That's not what this is about. This is about changing the demographics of our community to the point where you don't need your schools. You don't, and anybody that talks about affordable housing, not low-cost housing, but affordable housing in our community is just giving it lip service. Because our affordable housing is gone. I came home, I've been gone 90 days. I came home, the first person I met said, oh, you know so-and-so, they bought three more since you've been gone. I said, three more houses? You have to put in their short-term rental management program. So I don't know what Scott, what statistics he's using, but the guy that lives next to me owns seven of them in this area. And not maybe all in Boyne City. But I would ask you as commission, as you think about this issue, please distinguish between the traditional residential district and waterfront residential district where you sold me a home, called it a single family dwelling, and now I've got a mini motel next to me. That's different than all the other zoning districts. I think you should treat those two zoning districts as separate, the traditional and the waterfront residential. Those people bought homes believing they were going to have a single family home next door to them. And they don't. I don't. And you may not if you live in that. If you know, it can happen to any of us, the way this issue is just blown up. I would encourage you to, you know, think that through as two distinct cases. The single family versus the multiple housing. I think you could treat those two things differently. I will say, and I'll sit down, the Court of Appeals in October 21st of this past year, a case called Cherry Homes Association in Leelanau County had a short-term rental issue. The Court of Appeals stated a short-term rental is not a residential use of the home. It's a commercial use of a home. And what that means long-term, I don't know yet. There's going to be some more litigation over that. I hope Boeing City doesn't have to get involved in that. But the Court of Appeals has said a short-term rental is not a privacy right or a property right that I have to use my property any way I want to. If you allow a residential home to be used as a commercial property, I think that would require some sort of conditional use from even today.
from probably the Planning Commission, but I think it should be stronger than that myself. I think it should be, have to go to the Zoning Board of Appeals and give the neighboring homes notice of whether or not this particular home is going to be turned into a mini motel. Thank you.
Did you have any questions?
So, do you have a suggestion for like a compromise on any of this?
I wouldn't let them do questions that I have actually.
No, Richard. Well, I think the compromise would be to treat the TRW and the WR differently than the others.
I just want to let you know and let Sherry know that I saw her hand up, so we have one person waiting. Whatever you think is appropriate.
I saw a hand over your phone.
My name is Rick Balin, my wife Diane, and I live in Point City on 33 Anderson Road. And we do, I am here to support short-term rentals. However, I think Tom brought up some great points. But I think we have to look outside the box a little bit, and compromise is a great solution to everything. At least it wasn't my business career up until I retired in 10 years ago. But Diane and I own several rental properties here in town, both long-term and short-term rentals. And other towns have been able to come up with great compromises where they do a number of different things to accommodate short-term rentals as well as homeowners. I have to be a homeowner also. It could be something as simple as requiring, or actually starting out with setting a limit on the number of short-term rentals you're going to allow in the city. If there's 154 right now, it's probably getting close to the maximum. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there shouldn't be 254. There's got to be some guideline somewhere. And along with that, there should be a annual licensing fee that every owner should have to pay. They should have a short-term rental. They should be paying something to the city. I'm going on vacation to South of Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, 2 weeks. I'm paying a huge amount in city fees and taxes to be able to rent a condo there. So there's ways to attach a use fee, a multiple use fee. Las Vegas has been doing that for years. The resort fees at all major hotels. There's ways to make things work for everybody, short of just eliminating everything. My concern with short-term rentals is, and forgive me for using the term, slumlord landlords. I don't want to see a three-bedroom, one-bath house that sleeps 12 people. It doesn't make sense to me. They're listed on Airbnb, they're listed on Vrbo right now. And that's not right. As a realtor or any reasonable person, hopefully you wouldn't sell a three-bedroom, one-bath house to, I know you can't make those restrictions, but a family that has 12 or 14 people, it's too much stress on the house itself and the infrastructure, and it's not designed for that many. Hotels have maximum occupancy per room. A short-term rental should have the same thing. There's all kinds of ways you can come up with making things easy for everyone. That includes building codes. All of our properties were built to code, but we've updated every one of them. All of our rental properties. Smoke alarms, carbon monoxide detectors, parking. It's just things you have to do. Or you end up becoming what I call a slumlord. Anyway, that's all I want to say. There's easy ways to compromise. You just have to think about it. Other cities have done the same thing. Sad for Sedona, Arizona. Sedona, Arizona, a beautiful city. I've been there many times. But obviously, they didn't take the right action at the right time. And that's what Point City needs to do.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Maybe we can take our
online person?
Yeah.
Okay, do that.
My wife.
Sherry, if you could unmute yourself. There you go. You're good.
Yeah.
You can hear me. Yep.
So thank you for allowing me to just a couple of comments and things to consider.
Sherry, can you identify yourself, please? Your location?
Yes, West Main, 6 West Main.
And your name, I'm sorry, we missed your name.
Sherry.
Sherry who?
Sherry Demichek.
Thank you, go ahead.
Okay. So one of the things to think about, or I have questions right now, are, well, there's a lot to consider here. This is a complex issue, there's no doubt. And with the student decline of 19% in the schools, can that really be tied back to short-term rentals? The birth rate's at the lowest point ever. State Michigan has the second lowest population growth in the country. Last year we lost over 16,000 people, the census says. So that information is easy to see, but the whole state is hurting in terms of student population is definitely declining in schools and in colleges. And so I don't know that you can tie that to short-term rentals. I understand the concern over the demographics and being cautious there. But I think that is something that needs to be considered. Is that really tied to the short-term rentals, or is it something that's really it's happening? I know it's happening throughout the state. Questions I would have would how will you attract and deregulate short-term rentals, and depends on what comes out of this, how will you attract people to Boyne City? This people when people vacation, they need a place to stay. So where will they be staying if they're going to come in Boyne? For all the wonderful festivals that Boyne Festival has, or Boyne City has, including Boyne Thunder, where will all those participants stay? I think that's something to consider. Something else to consider is that vacationers bring in a lot more money per week, in especially in the summer months, but you know, even during the ski season, vacationers bring in a lot of money that helps Main Street to thrive. There's no doubt about that. Versus if a person purchased a dwelling and had it as a second home and didn't rent it, or just had it as a permanent resident, there's no doubt that they wouldn't spend as much money in there. So what would be the plan to make up for that income loss if we have fewer short-term rentals? So there's just some questions there. We know short-term rentals also attract tourists from other states. And how will we bring in more tourism there? So that's kind of an overall thing there as well. For the concern over a rental with a three-bed, one-bath, 12-person house, typically people won't do that because it doesn't accommodate unless you're getting a college crop in there or something like that. So a lot of times that takes care of itself because it's not what people are wanting for their vacation. I guess that's it. What would you be doing? You know, that's just something that what we'd be doing to bring in the income to the Boyne Street, City Main Street, if all the short-term regulations and ordinances are put into place. Those are just some other things that need to be considered.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Pardon me?
Sure.
Yeah. We need to take a recess for a few minutes. What time is it? 6:29, we'll be back at 6:35. We'll be back at 6:30.
Recording stopped.